Start some trouble and call the fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 302. McMonagle here with you on the fan. Marco's just telling me there's some post-game. Again, I didn't get to see the post-game. I waited at home as long as I could. The second that game ended, I had to run out of there. But apparently Lamar Jackson saying that he believes it was a touchdown and that it was a bad call, I guess, that he didn't think the toe was out of bounds. I mean, it's pretty indisputable. And I did see, as I was on scrolling through Twitter, I saw that Patrick Mahomes suggested wear white cleats next time. And you know what? It's funny, but it's not that stupid. It's not that stupid to wear, like, you know, the sideline's white. You never know. All right, so we have the Lamar cut. Let me hear what Lamar Jackson had to say about the final touchdown. So obviously, end of the game, he has two opportunities. Everyone's going to go off the Flowers one, no doubt. He missed him by a mile, had him wide open for the touchdown. He also missed Likely in the corner of the end zone on the play before. I thought he had a touchdown. And then came back to Likely for the score, but toe landed out of bounds. End of game, clearly out of bounds. And this was what Lamar Jackson had to say about that final play.
You said it, James. I thought it was a touchdown. I thought it was a touchdown. I still think it's a touchdown.
Okay. Still think it's a touchdown. Maybe he hasn't seen the replay. I don't know. It's pretty obvious. I don't think you have a lot to quibble about if you're the Ravens, right? Theoretically. You have Spagnuolo calling timeout. That's illegal, right? You got Isaiah Pacheco allowed 35 seconds of just standing straight up before getting pushed into the end zone. You got, you know, I don't know, a million procedural calls at the beginning of the game that you probably feel were ticky-tack. You probably have a lot to complain about. The toe is not one of them. And then I guess Isaiah Likely had something to say after the postgame as well.
I say this is probably the worst game we're going to play all year. So this is the best that they got. I mean, good luck in the postseason.
He's got to be kidding. Play that one more time.
I say this is probably the worst game we're going to play all year. So this is the best that they got. I mean, good luck in the postseason.
He just... You know what? You were coming off like... You had a great day, man. You had a great day. You completely... Like, you had a good year last year when Andrews went down. People expected things from you. You were, you know, but immediately in this game, you were the weapon practically of the offense outside of Lamar Jackson and maybe Flowers for a time. You got a huge game, big touchdown down the field, and then almost won the damn thing. Why would you come out and say something stupid like that? I've just been telling you. I know he wasn't listening, although he should be. Why not? 888-808-1019. You can call in. They beat you every single time. You had them in your building last year in the AFC Championship game with an ability to go to the Super Bowl. You blew it. You blew it. This is a two-time defending champ. You're going to tell them good luck in the postseason? They got Patrick Mahomes. They just went down the field and beat you. You made dumb mistakes. That's the worst you're going to play. Good luck. Okay. If the Chiefs actually weren't laughing at it, they might get pissed off. And they might use it for fodder and, you know, bulletin board material later if it wasn't so damn funny. These are the Chiefs. You're going to go and make good luck in the playoffs comments to the Chiefs, who literally have now beaten you twice in a row, including in the AFC Championship game? Come on. You had a great day, man. You had one hell of a game, and you look like you're going to be a player. Don't tarnish your night saying dumb things. Good luck to them in the playoffs. Wow. Mike in Westchester, what's up, Mike?
Hey, Steve Mac, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, buddy. What's up?
So, yeah, the police stole my thunder. After your opening monologue was great, I was thinking the same exact thing, that the Jets, if everyone's healthy, they're probably the only team that can beat the Chiefs at this point. The Bengals, yeah, they've done it twice, but who knows? You know, Burrow gets hurt sometimes. Chase, who knows? Also, if you can comment a little bit on the calls, how are they missing that tackle going false start every time?
I know.
But also, eventually, if Hassan Reddick, how long are they going to hold out on this guy? Like, can they trade him? Like, I was wondering because, if they don't want to give him the contract, then you just let him just sit on the bench. What
Correct.
If they could get?
Correct.
What if they could?
What are they going to get for him?
For like a, I don't know. What if you can get flip him to the Raiders for try to get Devontae Adams somehow?
Yeah, I mean, I heard that story. I mean, yeah, sure. If they have a trade in the works for Devontae Adams, and it's obviously going to have to be a hell of a lot more than Hassan Reddick, but like if they have a trade in the works and the Raiders ask for Hassan Reddick, sure, of course. But, I mean, barring that, like, but that's not, you make it sound like that's the choice, that they have a trade for Devontae Adams ready to go, but they don't want to give up Hassan Reddick. No, I mean, that if the Raiders want Hassan Reddick, you throw him in the deal. Totally agree. But that ain't going to happen. And I'm not trading him for. I traded him for a conditional third round pick. When I would get now a fifth round pick. I right now that makes no sense. Now look, if there's a winning team that suffers a major injury to a pass rusher, or that's obviously a part of their game that's keeping them from being a legitimate Super Bowl contender, or whatever happens as the season goes along, and someone wants to offer me better than what I gave up, I guess I'm open to it depending on how I'm playing. But right now, let him just sit. I'm not trading him for less. I'm not doing that. I'm not getting back less. I'm not losing for no reason. I'm not losing a draft pick. I'm not losing a round in the draft just because Hassan Reddick's not going to be here.
It would be for someone of Devontae Adams,
of course, but I mean, you make it sound like that's the choice, or this, like, how long do you wait until you make that move? If that move's there, you make it tomorrow, but that's not the case.
Hmm. Okay. Last thing is, did you see the recent article about the I know it's a little change of topic about Dominguez and recently on Twitter how there's a rift
from John Heyman?
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw the article, and pretty much what Mike is talking about is there was an article, and thank you very much for the call, Mike. I appreciate it. Mike is talking about an article that came out from John Heyman saying that, you know, during the decision for the September call up, there was a lot of discussion about bringing up Jason Dominguez, and that many scouts or, you know, people in the Yankees organization and front office were screaming loudly to bring up Jason Dominguez. And that the sense is, now I didn't hear him, I don't know if he confirmed this, but he implied pretty strongly that the reason that he's not up here is that Aaron Boone and Brian Cashman still have a belief in Alex Verdugo, and that they're not ready to just not play Alex Verdugo. And here's what I'll say just briefly. Me and Fliegelman were talking about a segment doing this, and we could do it right now, Fleegs. Ready? For your Yankee shill take of the day, what I will say is I agree with Brian Cashman that I wouldn't call him up unless I'm ready to play him every day. Here's the problem. Why in the world would you not be ready to play him every day? He has got to be here. This, whatever the reason is that you are holding on to the hope of Verdugo being what? Like, that's the thing. Like, even if Verdugo turns it around, what is he? An average major league player? Okay, yes, that's better than what he's been. And maybe a lefty contact guy who's played in playoff games for the Red Sox and been around this environment. All right, it's probably a positive. Is it better than possibly Jason Dominguez being what he was for the 10 games or whatever it was last year? The ability Jason Dominguez could be, the ceiling that he could possibly provide? It doesn't make any sense in the world. I don't want to yell about this. I don't want to do this. It's a football day, and I don't want to occupy with my anger with the New York Yankees. But yes, I saw the article from John Heyman. It doesn't make any freaking sense. I don't know how Aaron Boone and Brian Cashman feel this way. I just don't. Because what I mean, it should. If you call him up on September and now you give him a 2-week run, you could always go back to Verdugo if he struggles. If Jason Dominguez comes up and goes 0-for-18, I mean, I would still say I'd rather just hope he gets hot. But at least then I could say, well, it's hard to argue. Jason Dominguez came up. He had his chance. They gave him 2 weeks. He went whatever, and he went 0 for 20, and they're going back to Verdugo. I hate it, but at least there's a reason for it. This makes no freaking sense. He just hit another home run in the minor leagues yesterday. It makes no sense that Jason Dominguez isn't here. And the idea that Brian Cashman and Aaron Boone think that, you know, playing Verdugo is better for this team is hard to fathom. And I've been as patient and understanding as anyone. You all let me know this on a daily basis. I have been as understanding on decision-making with this organization as anyone. This one makes no sense. Because in my mind, Verdugo was brought here to replace the injured Jason Dominguez. If Jason Dominguez just finishes out the season last year, doesn't need Tommy John surgery, he's the starting center fielder. And maybe you bring in Verdugo still, I suppose, but he's your fourth outfielder. He's just in case Jason Dominguez just had an incredible, you know, 3 week end of the season and you want to make sure of it. But like, he's not the guy. So what are you holding on to? Like, even Hicks, I understood. They gave him a 7-year contract, and for a brief moment in time, he was one of the better center fielders in the league. For the New York Yankees, in a New York Yankee uniform. Hit home runs off of Verlander in the playoffs. Like, they gave him way too long a leash, but at least in my mind, there was some sense to it. They didn't have a much better option. They traded for outfielders to replace him, but he was sticking around because, hey, it sort of made sense. He did show promise as a Yankee. He is under contract for the next 3 or 4 years. Like, at $10 million, like, it's just, it sort of made sense. As much as I hated it, you hated it, we all hated it, at least there was a argument. I don't know how Brian Cashman makes an argument for this one. And again, it's not the reason they lost specifically. They've been giving up a ton of runs, the bullpen. But if you're going to give up a ton of runs in the bullpen, you need your best possible offense to score more runs. Like, the bottom line is to have your best players. And that's not Verdugo right now. Like, it's just not. And Jason Dominguez, who came up here and showed you last year what he could do, is killing it right now. He's been hurt. I get it. Like, and a lot of people think it's Brian Cashman trying not to look bad. I've argued with a bunch of people on this. Like, well, if he comes up and hits, Brian Cashman looks bad. Or if they give up on Verdugo, Brian Cashman looks bad. Why? How does he look now? Good? This is a player he drafted, a player he developed in his farm system, who could come up and help bring this team to the postseason, and that would be bad for him? Because what, Alex Verdugo, a guy they only brought in because Dominguez was hurt, failed? All right, you live with it. They took a chance. We all thought it was a good idea. I did. It didn't work out. And then the idea that if Dominguez hits, he looks bad. Dominguez has been hurt. It's not like Dominguez has been toiling in AAA the entire year and they refused to call him up. He had Tommy John surgery, then he had an oblique, and then when he came back from the oblique, he was bad. It's been a good, solid 2.5-week stretch where he's raking. So now do it, though. But now do it. He is hot. He is performing. Do it now. He should be in Chicago. There's no, with meeting up with the Yankees right now, he should be landing in Chicago now. He should have been on a red eye. I don't understand it. I don't want to make this. I don't want to make these 3 hours on a Football Friday about it. And I could already see the line. The guys call him. We'll take your calls on it if you want. But like, it is impossible not to be frustrated by it, and it is impossible not to get on this organization for it. It doesn't make any sense, and the way they played the other night doesn't make any sense. And I know we want to kill Boone for it, and I killed Boone for it, and I'm fine with it. I'm fine with killing Boone. This isn't to defend Boone. But how about the players? Like honestly, if Aaron Boone was the manager of the 1990s dynasty, do you think they wouldn't play hard? Do you think Aaron Boone would have been capable of cultivating an attitude with Paul O'Neill that he would be okay with not hustling or getting angry or everything would be fine because Aaron Boone was his manager? Do you think Derek Jeter would be okay with losing? Or not run things out because Aaron Boone was his manager? Do you believe that? I'm not saying he's not a problem. I'm not saying he hasn't helped cultivate this attitude. But on some level, can I also be upset with the players for doing it? Is there not personal responsibility to with 20 games left in the season to make sure you don't allow a soft ground ball up the middle to become a double? Or that you don't, or that the captain making $40 million throws to the right base? Is that Aaron Boone, that they didn't practice that enough? Is it really? Is it really? I'm open to it being, I'm not happy with Aaron Boone, don't get me wrong. And this isn't, I'm not bending over backwards looking for an excuse to defend him. I'm just saying, at some point, don't we also have to get on the players? Like, and that's Brian Cashman who brought these players in, but this group, for whatever reason. And yeah, the manager has a role in it, no doubt. But also, don't the players just have to have the personal responsibility? Because I refuse to believe that there are teams where the manager could come in and it would change. Like, if Aaron Boone managed Paul O'Neill, Tino Martinez, Derek Jeter, are they okay with losing because Aaron Boone's their manager? Are they not hustling because they believe it's okay because that's what Aaron Boone has instilled in them? Because I know Joe Torre didn't. I'm not saying he did, but Joe Torre didn't get on players in the postgame. I watched almost every postgame of Joe Torre's career. I never remember him calling out players other than maybe David Wells, because he didn't like David Wells and thought he was lazy and you know, overweight or whatever the case may be, out drinking at night. But other than that, like, he never got on anybody. He didn't really bench people. He didn't hold anybody accountable. They didn't do crap like this. And part of it's him. Part of it's the players. And as much as I love Aaron Judge, and I do, he's a great player. It's hard to get on him. He's phenomenal. And there have been people who've written stories and called him the best leader in baseball, where the Yankees aren't afraid to go get guys like Verdugo and Josh Donaldson and anybody else, or trade for Jazz Chisholm when there's a reputation, because Aaron Judge won't allow that kind of stuff to go on because he's the best leader in baseball, the captain of the New York Yankees. Is he not, on some level, accountable for the effort his team gives as the captain of the Yankees? Like, we can kill the manager. Let's do it. We'll do it together. I'll gladly do it. He's pissing me off. But, like, that's just an inert thing that you have to have. You have to have it. And maybe I'm missing the boat because we've seen it his entire, you know, we saw the moping, and we've seen the different things from a lot of the young players. Gary Sanchez, same thing. Gleyber Torres mopes when he slumps. Same thing. Same thing. So, absolutely, Boone has his fingerprints on it. But I'm tired of, it's all just about Boone. It's always, Boone has allowed this, Boone has allowed this, Boone has allowed this. Could there have been an environment that Boone could have provided to allow the 1990s Yankees to feel this way? Is there? Because I don't think so. I don't think you can coach Paul O'Neill to not care or beat up a water cooler. Like, I don't think you can coach that. I don't care if it's Lou Piniella's manager, Joe Torre's manager, Joe Girardi, or Aaron Boone. That's Paul O'Neill. And he is going to fight. And that's Derek Jeter. And that's those guys. Like, could you coach that out of them? Was it coached into them? Or did they just have it? And the Yankees need to find more guys or bring in a coach who pulls the magic or whatever to get more of that out of them. Because I'm tired of watching not just not running out ground balls, but taking things lightly in the outfield. Stuart in Brooklyn, what's up, Stu?
My favorite topic, Brian Cashman.
I know, yeah.
First, let's say this much to you. How many years ago should he have been gone? And Aaron Boone, you're right. I have noticed that they have gotten totally lazy out there. It's like they're not hustling. they're not moving. And you talk about Paul O'Neill. Derek Jeter wouldn't put up with this.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If Derek Jeter were on this team, coached by Aaron Boone, would he put up with it?
Nope.
Well, then
he would put his foot down.
Where's the players on this team putting their foot down?
He's not putting his foot down.
That's my point. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, that doesn't make any sense. They are so lackadaisical. It's like they just don't.
Well, I mean, not. I mean, yeah. I mean, not all the time. It seems like when. I don't know, like, again, I don't know if it's the environment around this whole thing where, like, the fan base becomes vitriol, because that's been a talking point, too. Like, I don't know, and not to blame the fans, they have to be mentally tougher than to allow the fan base to get to them. But, like, the idea that when they start losing, everybody, you know, the fan base doesn't like them, although they show up to the ballpark, or there's, like, talk of...
That's the whole thing.
There comes to be such a negative feel around the team the minute they start losing that they struggle with it. Like, I don't know... what's going on, but it seems like when things are riding, when things are going high, like the start of the year, they didn't look lackadaisical to me. Like when they were winning, they didn't look lackadaisical to me, but now that they're on these losing streaks, suddenly that's what happens.
Well, the thing is that's what motivated the 90s dynasty. They didn't get, when they got into a losing streak, they always found a way out of it. And it was led by Jeter and O'Neill. Jeter and O'Neill always led them out of the losing streak. And they didn't permit the players to get lackadaisical. And if they did, they would be talked to, in public, but in the background.
Yeah, exactly. But how do you know Aaron Boone's not doing that?
He is not.
No, you don't know that. It's just not working.
I don't know that, but you know what we're seeing on the field.
That's what I'm saying. But it's also about the players, too. Like, I'm not trying to deflect blame from Boone. He gets it. But we're not giving enough, like... anger towards the players, other than the couple guys we don't like, other than Verdugo. But it's more than that. But right now, you can't change that. I mean, there's nothing you do about the manager and the atmosphere that apparently has been cultivated. What you can do is play your best guys. That's the only thing you can do. They don't have an option in the bullpen. Like, the bullpen's been a disaster. It's been one of the main reasons they're losing. They don't have an option. There's nobody to call up. There's nothing to do. They got to figure it out. They're going to do this bullpen by committee. Boone's got to pull the right strings. They got to put the right guy in there. Guys have to pitch well. You know, they're getting pretty good out of Cousins. This Tim Hill has been incredible for them compared to what he was doing prior. Like, they have to figure out a way to get this bullpen together because they don't have answers. The offense, while it's not been the main problem, and they do lead the American League run scored, they're going to have to overcome their pitching issues by scoring more runs. And they have a better option offensively than a guy who is lazy and, more than that, is like 30% worse than the average player. And that's what I care about. Like, honestly, I don't care how the groundouts look that much. Like, it bothers me. I'm mad about it. Fine. We can yell about it. Fine. The fact is, he's grounding out constantly. That's what bothers me. Like, we haven't seen that many plays where if he hustled, he would have been safe. He's just out, but we don't like that. We don't like the way he's getting out. I have more of a problem with the idea that he keeps getting out. And they have an answer of a young kid who came up here and hit a home run off Verlander his first swing and was crazy for 2 weeks. Like, can we try and see that? Doesn't make any sense. Dan in Garwood, what's up, Dan?
Big Mac, what's going on, brother?
What's up, man? How are you?
So I'm pretty good. So, quick couple points here with the Dominguez thing. Big Mac, you know, we've gone back and forth with the Yankees over the past few years. Sometimes we agree, sometimes we disagree. Sure. But I totally agree. I totally agree with you on this one, man. It makes no sense. The only thing I can see is like if Verdugo was like on fire,
sure,
and, like, out of his mind,
yeah,
then it would make sense. Then you play the hot hand. I get it. But here's the thing, like, so it makes no sense. You know, I bash Cashman constantly. I'm just sick of him. Mm-hmm. Boone, you know, Yankee fans, you gotta live with him because it's what you're going to get. They're never going to, the days of, like, you know, Billy Martin are over. They're never going to hire managers like that no more.
Yeah.
It's going to always be somebody who just is like a yes man. That's why he's there. So who are you going to replace him with? You know what I mean?
I think a yes man is a bit strong, but yes, I get your point. It's going to be someone who works in a session with the GM. There's no doubt about it. But it doesn't mean it's not going to... But let me just answer that one, like, because we'll talk about how great Mendoza is. Like, Mendoza was brought here under the same guidelines. Like, you think Mendoza has like more ability to do things than Boone does? Like, he's going to work with the GM. He's going to be that kind of manager who,
exactly.
I mean, like, but he's done a better job. They're winning. He's held more guys accountable. Like, they're like, it doesn't mean, you know, like, he's a yes Cashman, yes man. So it doesn't matter. No, it matters what he does. And he has more of a feel. He has more of a hold on this team than we're giving him credit for or blame for.
So, Big Mac, one last thing with the Dominguez thing. I don't know if it was during the game or if it was one of the shows I was listening to. Mm-hmm. Somebody, I don't know, like I said, I don't know who made the point, but maybe you could elaborate on it after I hang up after you get rid of it.
Yeah, just tell me what the point.
Somebody made a point that one of the reasons why they may be hesitant with Dominguez right now is because they want to preserve his rookie status
no.
and have team control. I mean, I don't want to hear already, that crap either. But,
it's, no, it's not true. You know, it's not true. It's already been debunked.
Okay.
He is.
Okay.
There was thought because if he wins Rookie of the Year next year, or when you have a player who wins Rookie of the Year, you get an extra draft pick. That was part of the new collective bargaining agreement. If you have a Rookie of the Year,
okay.
you get an extra draft pick. So there was a thought that they want to hold up his, because it's like 135 at bats or something, where you would lose your rookie status for next year. So the idea was they wanted to preserve that. So if he wins Rookie of the Year next year, he gets a draft pick. But they've already come out. Major League Baseball's answered the question. The Athletic wrote a piece on it. He has spent enough time on the 40-man roster where, yes, he can preserve his rookie status, but he's been on the roster so long that if he wins Rookie of the Year, the Yankees do not get a draft pick. So that's already gone. So there is no reason. There's literally no reason. And I think he's already been on the roster long enough because he rehabbed because he got hurt as a Major League Baseball player. So he had to be on the Major League roster for his injury. So he's been on the Major League roster long enough where he's already like up. This is already year one. They can't manipulate his time. So his free agency starts a year later. Like, there is literally zero benefit to the New York Yankees to keep him in AAA. There is zero benefit. The only reason they're doing it is because they, for some reason, believe Verdugo is better for this team than him. That's the only reason they're doing it.
It makes no sense.
It makes absolutely no sense. I would almost rather be it about manipulation. I would almost rather it be about they want to preserve his rookie status because it'll benefit them in some way. I would almost rather it be that because at least it's an argument. I might hate it. You might hate it. It might piss us off to think that the Yankees aren't all in and they're more concerned with next year and this and that. Fine. It would piss me off and I wouldn't like that answer. It wouldn't be good enough. But at least it's an answer. At least it's a, hey, we're thinking about the future. We want to make, like, you know, he is coming off injury. If we do this and we just bring him up next year, we could save millions of dollars to help us pay Soto next year. Or we could do this or that and get another draft pick that could lead to another Dominguez or something. Like, as much as we might hate it, at least there would be, like, some sort of flawed, although it may be, but logic behind it. There's nothing behind this other than they want to play Verdugo instead. And that is illogical. You can't convince me that makes sense. I would almost rather it be about a contract or whatever manipulation. I would rather it be about the rookie status. I would rather it have at least something they could tell me that even if I had disagreed with, but it was an argument. Verdugo's better for this team isn't an argument. It's just not an argument. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, I don't pretend to know as much as they do. This is where I think the fans get in trouble, and I'll get in trouble with the fans. Like, we all joke about, oh, Brian Cashman, he's the smartest guy in the room. And yet, everyone who says that from their couch thinks they're smarter than him. Like, it makes me laugh. So I don't get hung up on that. And I don't often say, you know, like, but this one, it's hard to argue that the fans aren't right. It's hard to argue that this one doesn't make any sense. I don't get hung up on, oh, he thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. Well, you know what? You talk around baseball, a lot of people think he is. I think it's a lot harder to do what he's done over the last handful of years. I think it's hard to have this many winning seasons, even without championships. I'm not throwing him a parade for it. I just think it's tougher than a lot of people think it is. Even with the money spent. And I usually push back with, hey, you're the smartest guy in the room. There's Brian Cashman. Like you know better. This time you do. This time it's hard for me to come up with an argument to defend Brian Cashman and Boone and the Yankees. There is zero reason why this kid shouldn't be here. Zero. Plain and simple. If he's not in Chicago, they're wrong. Every day he's not on this roster, they're flat out wrong. And they're not doing what's best for the team. They are actively working against their best interest. Every day he's not here. And I don't say that. I get a lot of flack for not saying things like that when everybody else wants to run to it. This one, there's just, I can't see it any other way. They are actively rude. They are actively doing something against their best interest of winning. And if they were 6-7 games up, I'd be saying the same thing, even though it might make more sense that they believe in Verdugo. But even that, like, he's got to be here for the playoff push. Do you not want to play your best player? I'm done with that.
Chargers and the New York Giants have exchanged their draft picks.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Eli Manning and Philip Rivers.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Let's get to the Yankee calls briefly here as quickly as we can before we get to the picks with Marco, myself, and Fliegelman and get back into the football. So a couple of Yankee calls here, 888-808-1019. Mike in Cooperstown. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how you doing, Chris? Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, buddy. What's up?
Love you in prime time, but I'm glad you're at night because I work at night, so I get to hear you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Want to get your back on a couple points. First of all, obviously Dominguez should be up here.
Mm-hmm. Nah, it doesn't. I'm a little confused doesn't make any
by
sense.
That. I don't understand. Listen, Verdugo's a decent dude and all that, but
yeah, you know, and he was a good player for that early in the year. His attitude was important. He made a bunch of good defensive plays early in the year. I thought it was going to work out. Then, like, I remember when he hit that home run in his first at bat back in Boston, and I thought, you know what? That's the kind of, like, he is a dog. He is a, you know, to show up in Fenway with that pressure on him and to step in that box and hit a home run to dead center. I was like, you know what? He's going to be a player for the Yankees. And I was dead wrong. And whether it's his allergies to his batting gloves or whatever else, whatever the reason may be, it's failed this year. And it makes no sense.
I got it. Not do as good, and at least try.
There's no way Dominguez will do worse. There's no way.
And the worst that can happen, he does the same, which is, I feel, impossible. But, you know, that's the worst that can happen. At least try it. So it's literally, and I know you're not usually a Cashman basher. I like that about you.
Yeah.
But it's like, really, for real. It's like, what's up?
No, this one doesn't make any sense. Like, there's just I've been on Cashman before. He's done things that made no sense. I hated the Josh Donaldson trade. Like, there's been plenty of stuff to get on Brian Cashman over the last handful of years. No doubt about it. And I have been. I just push back on the nonsense where people will tell you he's been terrible every year since for 20 years. And, you know, what other employee? I got this the other day, and thank you for the call. What other employees allowed 20 years of failure? I'm like, okay. If you were a car salesman. And you were consistently the second or third best salesman every year, while some guys finished first one year and then they were the worst salesman the next year. Like, but just you knew every single year you were going to be a top five salesman in the company. Like, they fire you. But that's not how people see it. People see it as world championship or bust, world championship or failure. And I think for the most part, he was the GM of championships. I know nobody wants to give him credit for that. I don't have to get into it again. For your Yankee shill comment of the day. But I'm on him right now. And I'm telling you right now, if they never call up Dominguez and they play Verdugo throughout the playoffs and they lose, I said he should go last year. Nobody wants to remember it because I didn't say it with vitriol in my, I didn't say it with venom in my words. But I thought it was probably best to move on from him last year. This year, he'll have to be fired. I don't know. Him and Boone have to go. If Verdugo plays the whole year and they lose because they don't hit. Real quick, Maury and Belmore, tonight is your night, bro.
Yo, what's up? It's Isaiah Light. How you doing, bro?
Let's go. You're gonna take on the Chiefs in the playoffs and show them who you really are this time?
We played our worst game, and we just barely lost. And I called in because my little tippy toe was in, okay?
Yeah. Anyway. Well.
Right, that's my impression. Not very good. Sorry, but I figured you told him to call.
Well, listen, if you could have 9 receptions, 111 yards, and a touchdown, you could try and imitate that because he had one hell of a game. It's just the you know.
I just wish I picked him in some sort of.
I have him in two fantasy leagues as like a backup stash. One, I'm handcuffing Andrews with him, and I wish I would have played him. He's on my bench in two separate leagues, like a moron. But you know.
I want to just provide some insight on your shill, Yankee shill, because it's no longer Yankees. You know, like, I think it was Gio that calls it, what, Yankee talk?
Yankee hot stove.
It's called Yankee shill talk, but I think you're breaking down a little bit. I think we're getting to you where you're starting to realize Verdugo, Imbatego, whatever that disease is, when you get, like, a little rash on your face.
Yeah.
He's allergic to tattoos. Stop getting tattoos, you moron. And then bring Dominguez up. I mean, come on.
Yeah. This isn't about you getting to me. This is just the obvious. I mean, this is as obvious as it gets.
I've been telling you this for months that there's something missing. Now, I don't blame Boom every day. I don't blame Cashman every day. Yeah. But it's a microcosm of every mistake that they've made. You know, there's no fireballs in the bullpen. Like every team, the Seattle Mariners have guys that throw 101. I'm not saying that.
No,
that's the only thing you need is a close, and it's just frustrating, but I feel like you're coming around, you're starting to realize there's something missing.
They're 41-40 over the last, 40-41 over the last 81 games. I never tried to tell you something isn't missing. They're not a dominant baseball team. Something's missing. They're not very good. They're an average baseball team. They should be far better, and hopefully they will be over the last month, but like, the idea that Jason Dominguez is going to be a cure-all, I'm not saying that. It doesn't have to be that to want him to be here. He's just better than Verdugo. And I don't expect him to be what he was last year. And I don't expect him to be what he's been over the last 2 weeks in AAA. But he's better than Verdugo. And he at least gives you that ceiling. And he can't have a worse floor than Verdugo. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. This one, I've defended him. You know I have. All of you know I have. And I still don't think he's, you know, the worst thing ever. I'm pissed at him right this minute for this decision. It's asinine. 888-808-1009. Real quick break. Come back with picks. Who won last year? Was it you?
Come on now.
Yeah, I know that.
Come on now.
I know. I know it wasn't me. That's all I know.
I'll never do it again. It was like 20-something over.
No, you had a great year.
Yeah, that's never happening again.
We'll see what happens this year. I'm feeling confident.
Stuck in traffic and need to vent? Dial the fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Football Sunday. So good to me. Sunday morning, it was all I hoped it would be. I'm not strong to make you listen to that every week, but I had to do it once.
Well, Marco just died, so I don't know if we can play it every week.
Yeah! Football Sunday! I remember it sounding better, but it works. Oh. All right.
I'm going to need a few minutes.
You're going to need a few minutes.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Football Sunday. Good to me. All right, let's get to the picks. If you remember how we do it, because we're pressed on time, I don't want to spend too much time laughing. We do 5 picks, 3 other games, and obviously the 2 locals. Even when it's Monday night, we'll still do it today. Those are the 5 picks. Last year, again, I think we all did fairly well. By the end, I might have just snuck under 500 or right around 500, but all of us had pretty good years. But Marco had one of those special years. He's going to go last today. And then on the other side of the update, we're going to do our famous take a chance parlay. But right now, again, 5 picks, 3 other games, and the 2 locals. Fliegelman, you're up first.
All right, hopefully we take some time because it looks like Marco won't be able to make his picks for quite a while. And Marco gets to go last because he won last year. I had 11 games over 500. You would think normally it's good enough, but not with the year Marco had. Starting off this year, game number one, I'm going to take the Texans laying the 2.5 at the Colts. I know all the trends for, you know, division rivals and home dogs and division rivals as a home dog, but I think there's a little bit of a too bullish feeling on the Colts from the NFL community. You know, their over-unders right at 8.5. Anthony Richardson has played 17 games since he was a senior in high school. He missed most of last season. The Colts were better when Gardner Minshew was on the field than they were when Anthony Richardson was the quarterback. There might be some talent there, but it could take a little bit of time to develop. And this Texans team, I do believe in them. I don't think last year was a fluke. They have the quarterback and C.J. Stroud. They added Mixon. They added Diggs. You give D'Amico Ryans, a defensive coach, another year to work with that defense. We know what he inherited was not very good. Another year to keep turning it around. I believe in the Texans, so I take them to win in week one. Game number two, going with the Cardinals plus 6.5. Now, in reality, I bet this game when it was still at a touchdown, so I don't feel as confident as I did a couple weeks ago. It's come down, but I think it's come down because I believe in the Cardinals. I think a lot of other people do. I don't know if they'll win this game going to Buffalo, but I think this Cardinals offense is going to be pretty good, sneaky good. Kyler Murray looked good at the end of last season. They add Marvin Harrison Jr., and the Bills defense is missing a lot. They lose the two safeties. Matt Milano's out until at least December. Obviously, we know Diggs is gone, everything they lost on offense. So I think the Bills will still be a good team, but I think the Cardinals keep this one close. Game number three, Bengals laying the 8.5. I thought this line would be over a touchdown, or over 10 points, excuse me. I know Jamar Chase hasn't been at most of training camp. I don't think any of it matters. I know Bart even is banged up. I don't see how this Patriots team is going to even be competitive this season. This game, Bengals, I think they blow them out of the water in game number three. For the locals, give me the Giants plus 1.5. You and I have talked about it all week. You know, there's so much from a betting perspective that says bet the Vikings because this line just doesn't make a ton of sense, but I can't bet Sam Darnold as a road favorite until he proves to me that he's worthy of that. And I've seen these two head coaches go head-to-head before.
Yep.
And the last time they did so, Brian Daboll looked a whole heck of a lot better.
Yep.
So I know all the problems the Giants have. I don't think they're a better team. I don't think they'll finish with a better record than the Vikings. But in Sam Darnold's first game as the Vikings starter, give me the Giants at home plus 1.5. And Monday night, I would love to pick the Jets. I picked the Jets last year in week one, and we won that game. We covered as the Jets won. But in San Fran, I'm just going to be picking against the Jets until hopefully quickly, if not week one, week two, they give me a reason to jump on them. This line has come down. I think there's a good chance the Jets cover, but maybe this is an emotional hedge. I'm going to lay the 4.5 with the Niners.
All right, so we got the Texans, Cardinals, Cincinnati, Giants, and Niners for Fliegelman. I'm going to go next. I'm going to take my first game. I'm going to go Pittsburgh plus 3.5 against Atlanta. I know their offense stinks. I know who the quarterback is. I get it. But I trust Tomlin as a road dog as much as anyone in this NFL. And that defense is legit. And you got Cousins coming off an Achilles injury. Now, I know we all expect he does have some weapons. And I know a lot of people are high on this Atlanta team. I think it's too early to assume you're going to get the best of Cousins and this offense. I think it's going to take some time. Again, this is the first time he's going to step back and, you know, make a throw in an NFL game off of an Achilles injury. And I just love this defense. With Watt, I think this is a legitimately good defense, and I trust the coach in this spot. So give me Pittsburgh plus 3.5. Other game I'm going to take here is Jacksonville in Miami. I'm going to take Jacksonville plus 3.5. Miami's got no Ramsey. I'm assuming he's not going to play in the game. He's got a calf injury or a hamstring injury, and obviously no Chubb. That defense to me is not very good. And if you remember, this Jacksonville team was on its way to being possibly the 1 or 2 seed in this conference before the injury to Lawrence. I still trust this Super Bowl winning coach Peterson. I trust this quarterback. I like this team. And I just think 3.5 against the Miami team that, you know, people are down on defensively, they're not very good. And that offense, I know the weather was supposed to be bad. It looks like it's going to be okay. And the rain is, there was thoughts of a possible monsoon in Miami. I don't think we're going to get that. But still, this offense is such about timing. And when you start the year that way, I'm always hesitant about a first game of the season. Plus, I don't like their defense. And I just think Jacksonville is going to come out, and this coach and quarterback are going to have a chip on their shoulder in the way they blew the season last year. So give me the Jags plus 3.5. And then I'm going to take my one favorite here. I felt like I had to take one. I'm actually going to take Seattle here. I just think Denver's defense is pitiful, and you're starting with a rookie quarterback. Now, I think Denver and the coach are going to figure out Knicks, and that this offense could actually be okay because, you know, Knicks is like the oldest rookie quarterback of all time. I think he's probably the most ready to step in and play inside an offense. And, of course, the coach is the Hall of Fame coach, although maybe he's slightly overrated. And I think there will be a time for Denver to be okay in this lousy division of theirs other than the Chiefs, but it's not game one. And I think Seattle and this offense figure out a way, plus that defensive front and that defensive line is, you know, one of the better ones in the league. I just think it's going to be a tough day for this Denver team. So give me Seattle minus 5.5 against Denver. And then I got to do it. I'm going to go to Giants plus 1.5 as well. We talked about it a lot. And I do think this is a Dable game. Dable on the record, obviously, now making the play calls. Same game against a Vikings team that he had that performance, and the quarterback had that performance against Minnesota. And again, Sam, all the things Fliegelman just said, we've been talking about it all week. Sam Darnold coming into this spot against this Giant team that I, you know what? I know the defensive backfield is tough. They did add Adoree Jackson. Hopefully that helps. But I think the defensive front can be pretty good. And hopefully Burns and Thibodeau can get after Sam Darnold, make him see ghosts. I know, I hate to bring that up and take that low-hanging fruit, but I'll do it. And then ultimately this offense, Brian Dable has got to do it, and he's got to do it now. And it's been on the record. He feels like he's coaching for his job. If they don't win, Daniel Jones and his contract, we've talked about it, like, it has to start right now. At home, against this team that I think they can beat, with this offense, the new wide receiving core, I just think this is a spot. Brian Dable and this team is going to be ready for this game. And I think they, ultimately, I disagree with you, I think the Vikings might have a rough year. But I think this Giants team is better than this Viking team coming in. I'm going to take the Giants plus 1.5 as home dogs. And then I love the Jets. I've talked about it here for the first hour of the show. I'm taking the Jets plus 4.5. I think there's a Super Bowl hangover. I gave you the number. It's like 5-19 Super Bowl teams that lost the game come back week one the next year. They're 5-19 against the spread historically. There is a bit of a Super Bowl hangover. They had their left tackle who just got into the room, their wide receiver Ayuk who just got into the room, and I think this Jet team has been waiting for this game for a year. I think they're as talented as anyone up front. I know you're worried about the a little bit of a pass rush there, but the revamped offensive line, Aaron Rodgers and the explosive talent from the wide receiving core and the running game. I just think they are going to surprise the Niners. 4.5 is a bit much for me. I know it moved a point when Williams came back. I think this is a field goal game. So give me the Jets plus 4.5. So I got Pittsburgh, Jacksonville, Seattle, the Giants, and Jets. Marco.
All right, look, week one, we say this all the time, and I'm going to say it again. Week one's hard because you really don't know, and you got a lot of new head coaches.
Some people love betting week one. I hate it. I'm not a huge week one guy either.
There's no way. Because with the new coaches, with the new players in new spots, everybody's got a different wrinkle, and you haven't had a chance to see it on film. Teams are going to look better than they're going to look through most of the season, and some teams that are really good are just not going to look the way they're supposed to.
Yeah.
So every week one is a feel-out for all of these teams, the new kickoff rule, who's going to have the penalties. Yeah. We saw.
All right, stop prefacing why you're going to have a bad week. No, no. You know you this had an unbelievable year last year.
This is
year.
Not about me. This all is right. about everybody. So just be careful about week one. It's not exactly going to be a tell-all for the entire season.
Right, of course.
That said, there are some of the games that are we're thinking alike, so I'm not going to belabor some of the points. I'm with Fleegs on the Texans laying the 2.5 against the Colts. It's on the road, but I do believe in C.J. Stroud. I love this Texans team. I do think that they're set up for maybe not quite the expectation that everybody has them going from divisional playoff to, hey, maybe they make the Super Bowl run. That might be a bit much, but Stroud is for real, and I don't really think the Colts are for real. I'm not a big Richardson guy until I actually see him play. Call me crazy. Yeah. I want to see him do something other than run because I haven't seen it yet. So in this spot, in the first game of the season, I do like the Texans, again, laying the 2.5. I'm also with Fleegs with the Bengals laying the 8.5 against the Patriots. This is partly because the Patriots are going to be awful, just awful all season long. This is probably the number one pick in the draft. I don't know when we see Drake May, likely somewhat soon, but I don't even like the way Gerard Mayo handled that whole situation.
Yeah.
This whole thing just stinks all the way through with New England, which is fun to see. And I also think the Bengals are going to come out with a point to prove the Jamar Chase stuff. T. Higgins, I don't think they care. I think they're going to beat up on a bad team. They're going to enjoy it, and they're going to have some fun. They'll be one of the few teams that have a laugher to open up the season. The third game for me, give me the Saints laying the 3.5 against the Panthers. Hate the hook, but I'm going to take it anyway. They're at home. Derek Carr, they fly under the radar. Dennis Allen's going to be fired at the end of the year. They're not very good. No. They're okay. They're almost the definition of mid, but the Panthers stink. And I don't know if they're going to be able to, whether it's, you know, the new head coach, they're going to find not in week one. I don't buy it. Give me the Saints laying the 3.5. For the locals, I'm on an island here, and I'm in a different spot than most of the time, and I feel uncomfortable. I'm one of the few that think the Giants are actually going to be primed for a really good season.
Okay.
And a playoff push.
There you go.
I believe in Brian Dable. I believe in the regime. I love that he's calling the plays. I think their running game is going to be better without Saquon Barkley. I truly believe that. It's partly the offensive line. It's more on the fact that their offense was waiting for Saquon Barkley to pop a big run, and they stood around watching it. I give you the analogy of a basketball team where it's 1-on-5. Carmelo Anthony gets everybody else, and they all watch him go make a play. All that's gone, and I think this is going to be a mentality of us against the world. I love the mentality I've seen from the Giants in the preseason and training camp with Dable, with Jones, all of it. I think this starts the run. I love the Giants with the 1.5, so I'm with you guys on that, but this is not a straight Sam Darnold stinks. He's going to eventually throw a pick, which he will, but this is more of, I think this is the step the Giants need to get off on the right foot to possibly get in the playoffs. I also like the Jets on the 4.5 on the road with the 49ers. They may not win, but I have a hard time believing that these two teams, that this is going to be a runaway. Even if this is a backdoor where you're down 10 and Aaron Rodgers leads you down the field and you get it, I don't care. This is a 3-point game. I can see the Jets winning. I'm not going to sit here and tell you guaranteed that they do, but I have a hard time believing the 49ers cover 4.5 with all the issues they've had, Trent Williams, the Ayuk, all that. Opening day, Monday night, against Rodgers and crew, and the Jets definitely have something to prove. So, Saints laying the 3.5, Texans 2.5, Bengals 8.5. Give me the Giants plus 1, 1.5 against the Vikings, and the Jets on the road plus the 4.5 against the Niners.